The defining story of this moment is not any single battle report or diplomatic cable. It's the gap between what was promised and what is. 21 weeks ago, the Trump administration went into this conflict with a publicly stated timeline of 6 weeks. The logic was clear: surgical strikes on Iran's nuclear infrastructure, maximum pressure forcing Tehran to the table, conflict resolved before summer. That is not what happened. 13 consecutive nights of bombing have now been followed by a pause, negotiated through Oman, the same quiet diplomatic channel that has brokered U.S.-Iran communications for decades, and there are serious questions about whether that pause holds and on whose terms.
The Oman channel is worth explaining because people often underestimate it. Muscat has maintained functional relations with Tehran throughout periods when virtually every other regional power cut ties. Oman shares the mouth of the Strait of Hormuz geographically and has an existential interest in keeping that waterway open. So when the State Department says talks are advancing, that's not just diplomatic boilerplate. There's a real back-channel infrastructure there that has produced results before, including preliminary contacts that preceded the 2015 nuclear deal. The question is whether either side has enough domestic political room to accept what Oman is offering.
And Iran is complicating that picture internally in a way that's genuinely revealing. President Pezeshkian's office this week publicly accused the state broadcaster, IREB, of censoring remarks in which Pezeshkian claimed that the late Supreme Leader Khamenei had privately authorized negotiations with Washington, even while publicly ruling them out. That is a significant internal disclosure. It suggests that the hardline public posture was, at some level, performance, and that there was more flexibility at the top than Iran's official line admitted.
The timing of that leak, or that public accusation, really matters enormously. Khamenei died earlier this year, and the new supreme leadership structure in Tehran is still consolidating. Pezeshkian's camp making this claim now is partly about positioning in that internal power struggle, but it also gives U.S. negotiators something to point to. Here is an Iranian president saying his predecessor privately wanted a deal. That's diplomatic cover on both sides.
Meanwhile, Iran is claiming it destroyed 11 American warplanes during what it's calling renewed fighting. The Pentagon has not confirmed those numbers, and U.S. officials have pushed back sharply on the figure. Iranian state claims during active conflict have a documented pattern of significant inflation. This is not a new phenomenon. But even if the actual number is a fraction of 11, any confirmed American aircraft losses at that scale would be strategically significant and would explain some of the internal White House pressure we're seeing.
Which brings us to the West Wing leak story, because that's the domestic political consequence of the military situation. Aides are openly talking to reporters, not for background context, but with genuine frustration about how this has played out. Approval ratings have dropped, gas prices spiked as Hormuz traffic was disrupted, and the six-week promise is now 21 weeks old. The people doing the leaking are not disgruntled former officials. These appear to be current staff telling journalists that the second term has gone off the rails. That phrase, attributed to multiple sources, is striking because it suggests a loss of confidence in the strategic direction, not just tactical frustrations.
Ray Dalio weighed in this week with his characteristic sweep, calling the Hormuz situation the final battle that will determine the fate of American empire. Dalio has been making the declining empire argument for several years now, and his framework draws on historical cycles of reserve currency dominance and military overextension. The Hormuz framing is specific. If the U.S. cannot keep the strait open without sustained military commitment, the credibility of American power projection, which underpins dollar dominance and the entire architecture of post-war global trade, is genuinely tested. That's not alarmism. That's a real analytical claim.
I'd push back slightly on the final battle framing, though. Dalio's model is compelling, but it's also deterministic in ways that history rarely is. The U.S. has faced credibility challenges in the Persian Gulf before, 1987 and 1988, the tanker wars, where the U.S. reflagged Kuwaiti vessels and engaged Iranian forces directly. That didn't end American empire. What it did do was demonstrate that sustained military presence in the Gulf carries enormous economic and political costs that accumulate over time. The real risk isn't a single decisive loss, it's the slow drain.
And the Trump administration appears to be grappling with that exact calculation. There are reports that the president held off on a major escalation specifically over missile supply concerns. The U.S. stockpile of certain precision munitions is not unlimited, and sustained strike campaigns draw it down in ways that affect commitments elsewhere, including in Europe and the Pacific. That's a real operational constraint. The Pentagon is not publicly discussing it, but it's the kind of logistics reality that shapes decisions.
Trump also said this week that China and Russia are not aiding Iran, directly contradicting statements made by Defense Secretary Hegseth, who had suggested both countries were providing intelligence support to Tehran. That's a notable internal contradiction. Zelensky, meanwhile, accused Moscow of sharing satellite intelligence with Iran to guide strikes on U.S. bases in the Middle East, which is a specific operational claim that, if true, represents a significant escalation in the Russia-Iran relationship. Whether Trump's contradiction of Hegseth was based on intelligence he'd seen or was a deliberate diplomatic signal to Beijing and Moscow is unclear. But those two things can't both be true simultaneously.
There's also a Greek Patriot battery that downed two Houthi missiles over Saudi Arabia this week, a detail that often gets lost in the broader Iran narrative, but matters strategically. NATO allies are operationally involved in defending Gulf partners against Iranian proxy forces. That's a significant commitment that could complicate the Oman talks if escalation continues. The first Chinese tanker has now diverted around the Houthi blockade in the Red Sea, with war risk insurance costs reportedly tripling and nearly a dozen vessels reversing course near Yemen. That's global supply chain pressure becoming real and measurable.
And Netanyahu meets Trump on Tuesday, with the ICC arrest warrant situation hovering over that visit. Representative Khanna called this week for Trump to enforce the warrant. Secretary Rubio responded by calling ICC officials lunatics and crazies, while describing what he called a U.S. dismantling campaign against the court. The U.S. is actively working to undermine an international institution that issued a warrant against the Israeli Prime Minister, who is about to walk into the Oval Office. That is the diplomatic environment in which the Oman talks are supposed to produce results.